You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Americans are disrupting the status quo for social and political change. We'll find out about the rise of protest movements around the country.
First, it's a big day for America's national parks.
In California's beautiful Yosemite Valley, sailors on leave from battle zones enjoy a well-earned rest amid the peace and quiet of scenic national parks.
Virginia, inspiring his forest army by a personal visit, President Roosevelt makes his first tour of the Civilian Conservation Corps camps in the Shenandoah Valley.
In magnificent natural beauty of the American national parks have gone many companies of the Civilian Conservation Corps to further projects which will guard this wealth of beauty against destruction by man and nature.
100 years ago today, then-President Woodrow Wilson signed a bill into law that established the National Park Service, an agency charged with protecting and conserving some of the nation's most natural and historic areas, but also to encourage Americans to get out and enjoy them. Today, the Park Service maintains over 400 national parks and monuments across the country.
Well, getting to 100 years is a major milestone. Our national parks do face some significant hurdles in the coming years. The Park Service estimates that the parks are in need of over $12 billion in repairs and renovations. Others worry that we're loving our national parks to death and that too many visitors to those parks threaten the well-being of the natural areas the Park Service is trying to protect.
Here with us now to talk about the past, the present, and the future of the national parks is James Mills. He's an outdoors enthusiast, freelance journalist, and the founder of the Joy Trip Project. James, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, Rob.
Veronica, thanks for having me.
So, James, 100 years of national parks, it's a big milestone, a success story by most counts. So how big a deal is this, and what do you know about what went into that success?
Well, I frankly think it's a huge deal because it represents one of the great histories and heritage and legacies of our country, you know, but also our culture. And I really think that it's an amazing opportunity to celebrate and to embrace our natural world. And with events going on all over the country, I think this is an exciting site to spend time in the outdoors and hopefully get a chance to visit some of our national parks and our monuments around the country.
And you are a big fan of enjoying the natural world, the national parks. What do you love best about getting out to our national parks?
Yeah, I think what I love most is just the pristine and awe-inspiring beauty. I mean, when you take a look at places like the Grand Canyon or Yosemite or Yellowstone, you know, or even some of the lesser known or lesser utilized parks like Joshua Tree or the Shenandoah Battlefield that we had talked about earlier. I mean, there are some amazing places that represent not only the natural beauty of our country, but also our longstanding history, both as, you know, human beings, but also as Americans.
It could be tempting 100 years in, these parks are household names in a lot of cases, Yellowstone, Yosemite, to not think about what they might need to stay solvent and to keep drawing people and new people and not just the same people. So what are some of the challenges that the national parks are facing?
Well, I think you mentioned in your introduction that repairs and maintenance for the national parks is $12 billion in arrears. I mean, that is a lot of bathroom cleanups. That's a lot of trail maintenance. That's a lot of road repair. One of the biggest challenges right now is getting funds allocated from members of Congress to make sure that we do indeed have the ability to keep these national parks and monuments going well into the future. And, you know, and unfortunately, because you know, we just, you know, as a society haven't decided that not only are they worth protecting and preserving, they're also worth paying for. Now, granted, we definitely have park fees, but oddly enough, I mean, our park fees are actually relatively low compared to other types of amenities that we can enjoy in, for example, theme parks like Disneyland. But at the same time, you know, we need to allocate, in my opinion, more funds to make sure that the parks are cared for through the present and well into the future.
As we heard in that newsreel footage, there was a big effort with Civilian Conservation Corps about 20 years into the national park history. On the 50th anniversary of the parks, there's a big reinvestment and expansion Is there the will? I mean, you said it hasn't happened. Do you think there's enthusiasm to consider doing a big project like that now?
Well, as it happens, Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell basically created what she calls the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 21st Century. And there has been indeed a big push to get young people in particular involved, engaged in national park preservation, but, you know, not just the trail maintenance and the road building and the bridge building, but also interpretation, you know, making sure that there's conversations going on in the parks with people in the community that will actually learn why these places are so important to protect. Now, unfortunately, this was an unfunded mandate. There was not very much money invested in this on the federal level, but millions and millions of dollars were actually privately donated from corporations across the country who recognized the importance of this. And for example, the automobile company Subaru invested quite a bit of money in the Find Your Park campaign, which is going on right now. And so that there are private entities that are working to protect and preserve these places with their dollars. But frankly, I would love to see the federal government through acts of the Senate and Congress to allocate these funds long term into the future.
We're talking with James Mills right now. He's an independent media producer and a freelance journalist, talking about the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. And James, let's talk about the parks themselves. For those of us who want to use this 100th anniversary to get out there and explore some parks maybe we haven't been to, where do we start? There's so many.
You know, and as it happens, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of get put off by the notion that the parks are so big and they're so far away. Oddly enough, I really think that the best place to establish your love and appreciation for national parks is to start with your local parks. I mean, not too far here in Madison, there's Devil's Lake State Park, and it's probably one of the most beautifully maintained recreational areas in the state, with hiking trails and bike paths and a fabulous lake to swim and paddle and fish in. And I really think that once you start making that short sojourn, you know, not too far away from town, a longer drive, you know, perhaps over the course of, you know, an overnight trip, or maybe even deciding to, you know, get on a plane and flying to a destination and then ultimately driving to get there. I mean, for example, just about 2 weeks ago, I flew to Los Angeles and drove 5 hours to get to Yosemite National Park. 2 weeks prior to the, 3 weeks prior to that, I flew into Flagstaff, Arizona, then drove to the Grand Canyon. There are many places that you can get to. Frankly, I always believe that if there is indeed a will, there is definitely a way.
And you founded the Joy Trip Project to help connect people to nature in particular, I think. Can you talk about that and the national parks?
Sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, as a freelance journalist, I mean, one of the great things about the internet is that I have the ability to publish myself. And in those on those occasions where I couldn't necessarily convince a magazine to which I've previously contributed to, like National Geographic Adventure or the Sierra Magazine, Rock and Ice Climbing, different other national publications, the Joy Trip Project was basically a place where I could literally write every day and produce short videos and photographs and to kind of share with my audience, both locally and nationally, some of the things that I'm doing either in our national parks or in our public lands. And also, you know, I've done projects in foreign countries. For example, last year, I visited 5 national parks of Tanzania, Africa. Mm. You know, and oddly enough, one of the things that I discovered there is that they have the exact same issues that we have here. You know, making sure that more people and more varieties of different people use those parks and those resources so that they ultimately represent the whole preponderance of the populace, so that it's not just upwardly mobile people with wealth and with leisure time and the ability to, you know, to have the disposable income to take advantage of these things. It is indeed open to everyone.
And James, can you spend our last minute basically just inspiring us, telling us about a couple of the parks, maybe 2 or 3 that you've been to, and the most breathtaking thing that you saw or experienced that still stays with you?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, I just went to the Grand Canyon. And for many of your listeners who will probably visit the rim of the Grand Canyon, 4.5 million people a year visit the rim of the Grand Canyon. But this year, I was one of the 29,000 people that actually go through the Grand Canyon. And in this case, in a on a 16-person river expedition over the course of 16 days, paddling rubber rafts from one end of the Grand Canyon to the other.
Wow.
And I can tell you that one of the things that was most amazing to me was the colors. I mean, the light refracting on various different types of granite and sandstone create the most amazing views that you could possibly imagine. And it looks remarkable from the top down, but from the bottom up, the view is spectacular. And what's especially great about the Grand Canyon and other resources like it, because they limit the number of people that go there, they ultimately have the ability to preserve the area so that I can come back and tell these stories. But more than anything else, I want to make sure that people put in the time to get down there. Now, the punchline to the story is that I was part of an expedition that was literally 15 years in the making. A friend of mine who invited me to come along on this expedition had put in his first application to get a permit to paddle the Grand Canyon well over a decade ago. And it literally took that long. But I got to tell you, it was definitely worth the wait.
James, thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was James Mills, independent media producer and freelance journalist. He's the author of The Adventure Gap, Changing the Face of the Outdoors. And he was with us to talk about the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service.